give me a chance to talk about Hunger for More, and then we can ask you some questions at the end, which will help us to have a discussion. So Jesus meets this woman at the well in John chapter 4, the well of Sychar. That's in Samaritan country. Samaritans are half-breeds. They're the offsprings of Jews who married Gentiles, which was a complete and utter no-no. Samaritans were considered of less value than the family dog, and Samaritans were worshipped the same God, but did so in a different place. They did it on the mountain. The Jews worshipped their God in Jerusalem. And so, therefore, these two groups did not even talk to each other. Jews didn't speak to Samaritans, but it was interesting that Jesus chose to go through Samaria. He said, I must go through Samaria. If you look on the map, it was much shorter to not go through Samaria. So he took the long way on purpose because there was an appointment that God had planned for him. So we're going to read the scriptures. John chapter 4, starting in verse 3. Jesus left Judea and departed again for Galilee. If you look on the map, the shorter way to get there is not Samaria, and he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, weary as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour, and a woman from Samaria came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, give me a drink, for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman, and a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Jesus answered her, if you had knew the gift of God, and who it is that is saying to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as he did his sons and his livestock. And Jesus said to her, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And the woman said to him, sir, give me this water, so that I may not be thirsty, or I won't have to come again here to draw water. So the woman comes to draw physical water out of the ancient well that her forefather Jacob, that's very important, because ancestry is very important, Jacob had built. And Jesus says something very special to her. If you drink this water that comes out of this earthly well, you're going to become thirsty again. Well, there's a message for us today. If you drink the water of this world, whatever that may be for you, power, entertainment, because we spend more time watching TV than reading our Bibles or praying, material wealth, safety, security, comfort, job security, whatever your current worldly thing is, you can draw from that well and it will leave you thirsty again. Because inside you there's this deep inner thirst that can never be filled by the things of the world. And we all know that. And yet it doesn't change our behavior. And eventually we come to realize that whatever this whatever is that's in the world does not satisfy and will not fill that deep longing inside of us. So the Lord went on to say to her, but if you drink the water that I shall give, you will never, I like that word, never thirst again. When I was first saved, I don't know about you, but when I was first saved, I could relate to the first part of Jesus' words to the Samaritan woman. I tasted the things of the world. I lived in big cities. But once I tasted life in Christ, all temporary pursuits lost their spice, their draw, their attraction, whatever. When you know Jesus and have an encounter with Jesus, the things of the world should become bland or wooden or unfulfilling or pointless. And I found this new well that we could drink from, and it dramatically changed the direction of my life. And I'm speaking on my own behalf, but I'm sure the same can be said for you. Isaiah 12 says, "With joy you will draw water from the wells of salvation." And so when we have salvation, when we've encountered God in Jesus Christ, we should have great joy through the things of the Spirit and no longer look for that fulfillment, that filling of the emptiness on the inside from the world or the things of the world or of the flesh. Now, if I was sitting back and being really honest with myself, and that's the thing I do frequently, if I was being honest with you, meeting Jesus didn't quench my thirst entirely. I'm going to go backwards. If you drink the water that I shall give, you will never thirst again. Don't bang the table, please. I will never thirst again. When you get the wells of salvation, I believe Jesus is saying, you will never thirst again. That wasn't true in my life. When I got saved, it produced a greater thirst and a greater hunger inside me, one that's never been satisfied. I had this thirst and this hunger for more of Jesus, for more understanding of who he is, more revelation of what he actually accomplished on the cross. He accomplished a lot on the cross. Karen and I once did a 6-week, which turned into a 16-week, I'm sure, study of the cross. It was astonishing. And I can't even remember a third of it. But it was more than astonishing what he's accomplished on the cross. And I hungered for more knowledge of that, a deeper experience of his love. Because when you first encounter his love, you barely touch it. You barely understand it. For me, I wanted a greater grasp of his wisdom and his understanding of things in the world. I wanted to see the things the way he saw them, and I wanted to share his heart for the lost, the least, the last. So when I got saved, the thirst kept coming back, but it was greater. It wasn't less. I hungered and thirst, and it has never left me. I've been saved 42 years. That is honestly hard to believe. And have a greater thirst and hunger than ever before. Inside. So I hunger and I thirst so much at times that it hurts. It's honestly almost physically painful. I want more of him. And I think I know a lot more of him now, after 42 years, than I knew the night I got saved. But I still want more of him. And it has motivated me many times to make major changes in the way I live, in the way I think, in the way I act, in the way I minister, in what I do to minister. Jesus said we're to walk by faith, not by sight. That's 2 Corinthians 5:7. I haven't accomplished that totally yet. I don't know about you, but I want to grow in that. A hunger for more of that. Walk in the Spirit, not in the flesh. That's Galatians 5:16. I don't know about you, but I hunger for more of that. And not. So I'm hungry and thirsty today, more so than the day I met him, before I began to walk with him. And that hunger and thirst for more of Jesus, it's a constant companion. It's a motivation. It's a push. It's a shove. There are seasons in that. When you have a God encounter, when you've had an encounter with him, you get a glimpse of Jesus, the real Jesus. You don't see him in all of his majesty when you first meet him. You don't see him in all of his glory when you first meet him. If you have an encounter with him, it should be a life-changing encounter. And I'm sorry, but there's a lot of Christians today who are Christians in name only because they've not had a life-changing encounter with Jesus. But if you've had a true encounter, it initially changed your life, and it planted inside of you a hunger that is never going to go away, and a thirst that will never be satisfied. So if you were to read Isaiah chapter 6, where Isaiah meets God in the temple, changed his life. James and John, when Jesus calls them to leave their fishing business, changed their lives. Peter, when he realized who Jesus really was, that he was the Messiah, changed their lives. Paul, when he encountered Jesus on the road to Damascus, changed his life totally. So when people truly and seriously encounter God, something is going to happen to you. In my books, I call it, you're going to be wrecked. I'd like to get a coffee cup that says I'm wrecked. On the one hand, you're not going to thirst again. Jesus was right. You will never thirst again for the things of the world, or the things of the flesh, or the things of the devil, because they're contrary to the things of the kingdom. But you're going to have a different hunger and another thirst that is born within you. So you will thirst again, but it's for more of Jesus. That thirst should never go away. And should always be getting bigger, deeper, greater, if you focus on Jesus. So here's what Jesus is saying to the woman at the well. That he will remove your thirst, not by taking away your need for real water, but by showing you a new well which will never run dry, and a new water that you'll always desire more of. So I live in a tension, and I've been thinking about this all week. I live in a tension, a constant tension. On the one hand, I'm satisfied. Jesus Christ has quenched my thirst. But on the other hand, I have this constant thirst for more. And it is a tension between I'm okay, I'm not okay. I'm satisfied, I'm dissatisfied. I have a constant hunger that isn't getting satisfied. And this hunger has seasons. So you can be really hungry some seasons, and then seasons change and you're sort of hungry. And then if you're not careful, the seasons can change and you won't be hungry. I notice what season I'm in usually by the company I keep. Because if I'm walking with someone, ministering with someone who has a walk that's deeper than mine, it's very noticeable, very quickly. If I read a specific writer, a book or two, and I see that they have found what I want more of, then I read everything they wrote. I mean, literally. Because they have something I don't have. And they have more of the water. I'm not saying they're less hungry, but they found something I'm still looking for. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Okay, so if you were to ask me who some of those people are in my life, thank you for asking. Watchman Nee was one. He wrote a book called The Normal Christian Life. I just discovered he wrote a book called The Normal Christian Church, which I've just downloaded. Leonard Sweet would be another one. He's a professor in a couple of seminaries in the States. Brennan Manning, who just died recently. Frank Viola, who will definitely make sure you're wrecked. You only have to read about 3 pages of his book. One of his books I have upstairs, I just brought back from America. It's 2/3 the size of this table, and it's 895 pages long. It may be the reason why the wheels were broken off my...
Oh, Ralph.
Another one, suitcase. Yeah. Another one is Alan Hirsch. Yeah. There's a lot of guys who have the same hunger, the same thirst, but they are further ahead. And that's what you need to look for. Because information is just information. But if you find someone whose walk with God is deeper, greater, wider than your walk, grab hold of them. Don't reinvent your wheels. So when I find such a person, I become like a sponge. I just suck up what they've learned so that I can take a giant step forward. Otherwise, I'm just going to take little baby steps. So there's a point in all of this, and this is the point. Hunger is a sign of life. And I don't see hunger in a heck of a lot of Christians. I honestly don't. And if you're not hungry, I mean seriously hungry, one of two things is going on. Number one, this is really theologically deep. Number one, you're dead. Oh. Or number two, you need to be admitted to the ICU because you're in a coma. Christians should live in a constant tension between I'm okay, I'm satisfied, I have Jesus, I know him, I love him, I've encountered him, and I want more of Jesus. And that tension should be motivating us to move forward every day in our walk with Him. If you're not hungry, you're dead. Or you should be in the ICU. That's true for physical hunger, but it's also true for spiritual hunger. In my experience, I know it's limited, but when somebody says, "Hi, I'm a Christian," I have discovered that most Christians are satisfied with where they're at and what they've got. They're safe, they're secure, they're comfortable, and they think when they die they're going to heaven. And they think that's all this is about. I don't see spiritual hunger. I see, I want this, I want that. I don't like this, I don't like that. I'm not staying because, but I don't see hunger for Jesus. So I think most Christians are suffering from spiritual apathy and spiritual lethargy. They are tired or fed up or everything is too much effort or Jesus isn't worth the effort. And that's how we're coming across. So in reality, Houston, we have a problem. And it's a big one. And we need to fix it. So how do you get hungry for the Lord? It's simple. Hang around people who are hungry. Spiritual hunger is contagious. Proverbs 13, verse 20 says, "He who walks with wise men will be wise." Can I suggest that there's a principle in there that you could apply to many areas of your life? He who walks with hungry people will become hungry. He who walks with dishonest people will become dishonest. He who walks with those who deeply love God will deeply love God. So we need to find people that we can relate to who have what we want, and begin to walk with them, whether that's in a book, by video, you know, Facebook, whatever, or in person. We become the people that we hang out with. So we need to have a look at who we're hanging out with and realize we're going to become those people. Paul wrote it this way: "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." It's also in the book of Proverbs, so Paul didn't invent that comment. So the first century Christians were what we would call fanatics. They were on fire for Jesus. A fanatic, according to Rick Warren, is someone who loves Jesus more than you do. The early Christians lived and died for their faith. The apostles were ultra fanatics in my books. They were driven by God. They had this fire that was within them that motivated them to do whatever it would take to spread the kingdom throughout the Roman Empire, and they did it in less than 300 years. They had a passion, a fire, an inner drive, a compellingness, and because of that, they were unstoppable. They didn't get offended. They didn't get upset. Just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right.
Oh, that's good.
It's true, isn't it?
I like that.
The early apostles were utterly consumed with Jesus Christ and his ultimate purpose. So much so that if you read the history, they were stapled, they were bent, they were mutilated, they were pulverized, stomped on, and steamrolled repeatedly. They got right back up, put their hands back to the plow, and didn't look back. That's Luke 9, if you don't know it, verse 62. They considered it all joy when someone spoke contrary about them, when they were persecuted for the faith. Do you count it all joy, or do you just complain that you might get rejected if you shared the gospel with somebody? That's James chapter 1, verse 2. The only way you could stop the early apostles was to kill them. So that's what happened to them. They all died for the faith. By contrast, the early church was on fire for Jesus. By contrast, are you on fire for Jesus? What do you burn for? I see a lot of Christians in a lot of places. I'm not complaining about us. It's Christians everywhere I go who are not on fire for Jesus. They are content. They have their fire insurance. They have their get out of jail free card, if you know your Monopoly game. But they have no hunger, they have no thirst, and they have no fire. They got converted, maybe. I think maybe their eyes were never opened to see the real Jesus. Because when you see the real Jesus, even a little glimpse of the real Jesus, something happens to you that you don't get over and you don't forget. You can't slide backwards into whatever it was you slid out of. When you see him physically, see him spiritually, I mean, Paul said it, and Paul's life was changed. Paul said, God was pleased to reveal his son to me. That was it. It's the only thing he knew. So being born again is simply the first step, or the next step on your journey towards the fullness of God. It's not a destination. Being born again is simply one step in a long journey. And on the board, you'll see a journey where you are to be constantly looking for more of Jesus. Because there's a lot more to him than we'll ever know on this earth. And when you get to heaven, you're going to be amazed, maybe you know 2%. It's a journey where you're regularly changing and becoming more like Jesus. And it's a journey where you're always walking closely with others in the family of God. You just don't attend a church service. You don't just face the back of somebody else's head like in normal churches and count the number of dandruff pieces you can see. It's a journey, not a destination. It's a journey where you have an accountability partner to walk closely with us. You can't walk this alone. And you can say, well, we're walking this together. But this isn't accountable, because you don't know what I do during the week, and I don't know what you do during the week. And so you need an accountability partner, somebody you can be honest with, open with. It's a journey where we break through to a higher and a deeper expression of faith. I don't know how else. You know, there's a verse in the Old Testament, and I don't understand it, and I shouldn't quote it, but it's deep calls unto deep. I think you may have a deep relationship with Jesus, but it's calling you to the deeper relationship or a deeper expression. And it's a journey where the hunger and the thirst are never satisfied. I'm not judging where you're at. But inside me, there's this heart cry that says, if this is all there is, take me home now, Jesus. Out of here. I'm done. I don't want to go any further. I don't want to go any further in the church. I honestly don't. I think church is boring at the best of times. I think there's this cry inside of me that says there's got to be more to the Lord, to the Christian faith, and to the church than we see. And if there isn't, damn it, we're missing something. So deep inside, I think there is something seriously wrong with modern Christianity and the church. Deep inside, there's a push, and the push becomes a pain because I know that we need to break free from this tyranny of the status quo, business as usual. We'll go about and live like everybody else lives, and we're Christians. Don't believe it. And deep inside, I see a third alternative that is yet to be experienced in most Christians' lives. There are two alternatives that I see in the Christian church and in the Christian culture that we live in. One is spiritual complacency. And the second one is performance-based religion.
Yes.
I pray, I read my Bible, I come to church, I tithe, I worship. That's performance. So what? You do all those things. Big deal. Whoopee. What's it doing in your life? And how is it changing your life so that you can change the world? So deep inside, I think there's a third alternative, which is a deeper journey with Jesus that transforms us a lot faster than we're being transformed right now so that we can change the world. So there's the third alternative. You can be complacent, you can do your performance-based religion, or there's this higher and deeper daily expression of the Christian faith that God wants us to have. Deep inside, there's this realization that modern-day Christianity is 10 miles wide and 1 inch deep. And the world knows it. The world literally knows it. And I want a Christianity that digs below the surface, moves beyond the shallows, and actually deals with real life. I hunger and thirst for more of the real Jesus, who's a radical revolutionary who changes lives. Last Saturday, a week ago today, I was sitting in Happy Bean having coffee. That's a coffee shop owned by a Christian, operates out of a Christian university in Mount Vernon, Ohio. I was talking to a young man who the night before, a Christian, who's actually in Bible school, who actually has some ministry that he accomplishes in the Bible school, who's going to another Bible school starting in September to get another degree, who actually the night before went to a gay bar and picked up a partner. There is something wrong in the Christian faith. Seriously wrong. We are an inch deep and 10 miles wide. I want to live in a way that is radically different than the world. I want to follow Jesus to the ends of the earth if necessary and grab hold of more than I have. I want so much more. And I'm so tired of what I've got. So I don't know where you're at, but I'm fed up with everything I've got. And I just know there's more, more, more. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to have it. So here are my questions to you. What are you hungry for? I'm going to read them to you and then I'm going to come back to them. Second question is, what do you focus on during your average day? Third question, where is Jesus in your priorities? Fourth question, are you comfortable with your faith or are you seeking for more? And question number five, last one. Is there a deep hunger and thirst for more? Or are you coasting? Or even drifting? Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1 says, be careful that you don't drift from the faith.
Can you read number five again, please?
Is there a deep hunger and thirst? Right. It's okay, for more. Or are you coasting? Or even drifting? Hebrews 2:1. Okay, let's go back to the first question. Oh, let me say one more thing while you're writing the questions down. I'm not going to teach it to you. There's another teaching that's going to come right after this one. It's already written. It's called 9 Road Signs on Your Journey. And you can get it online starting Monday. It's not an audio. It's a written copy. But on your journey, if you want to determine how hungry you are or not, there are 9 road signs. And all I've done is taken the signs that you see on the highway, you know, stop, yield, go. And I've just talked them through and given you verses for each one. So there is a sequel to this teaching that you won't hear, nobody will hear. It's just up online. It's called 9 Road Signs on the Journey.